Suppose for a moment you're a novelist. How would you conjure up the buzzing swirl of life in the Amazon rainforest?
At dusk, the insects came down in a storm, the hard-shelled and soft-sided, the biting and stinging, the chirping and buzzing and droning. Every last one unfolded its paper wings and flew with unimaginable velocity into the eyes and mouths and noses of the only three humans they could find. Marina was less comfortable in the jungle now that she couldn't see it. She felt the plant life pressing against the edges of the water, straining towards them, every root and tendril reaching. "This is worse than a hailstorm," Dr. Swenson said, spitting out a small winged beetle onto the deck. "We can do without the lights." And then she turned off the lights. In an instant, the veil of insects lifted, and Marina saw nothing as she had never seen nothing before. It was as if God himself had turned out the lights, every last one of them, and left them in the gaping darkness of his abandonment.
That's Ann Patchett reading from her new novel, State of Wonder. It's the story of a young scientist working for a pharmaceutical company who's sent on a mission to Brazil. She's supposed to track down her old mentor, a scientist who may have discovered a miraculous fertility drug. State of Wonder is a fable about medical ethics, but also an exploration of what you find out about yourself when everything goes wrong. Ann Strangechamps wanted to know why Patchett chose this particular setting for her novel.
The Amazon has become a kind of modern icon today. It's got almost a mythic stature in Western culture. Is that part of why you decided to set your novel there?
No, actually. The reason that I set the book there is because I needed a location that had medical magic to it, someplace that was very obscure, someplace with no Verizon or AT&T store, so when my character's phone is lost, she can't go get another one. So I needed isolation. I needed someplace that had malaria. And then I also needed some place that had possibility, because this is about a development of a drug that is slightly unbelievable, but doesn't seem entirely impossible. And when I sat down with my globe and thought, okay, these are the three things I need, the Amazon was the winner.
How much time did you spend in the Amazon in order to write the book?
I was down there for about 8 or 10 days, which was about 7 or 9 days too long.
You did not fall in love with the place?
You know, it was so great for a few minutes. It was just amazing for a little while and very beautiful and so different, but so claustrophobic. I was actually okay when I was out on the water. Half the time we were on a boat, and that was really quite lovely. When we went into the jungle, I found it very oppressive because you can't do anything by yourself. You can't go take a walk. You can't sit outside. You know, there's always just something that's waiting to eat you. And they control the tourists very closely to keep them safe. Made me a little nuts.
So we should talk about your character, Marina, who
Sure.
is a pharmaceutical researcher, Western-trained doctor, who heads to the Amazon from pretty much the opposite kind of place. She leaves in the middle of a Minnesota winter and goes down there looking for a lost, well, a deceased lab partner. What's her experience of the Amazon?
She doesn't want to go to the Amazon. She loves Minnesota. She's a real homebody. The difference between Minnesota and the Amazon, when I thought about where I wanted her to start out, not only did I want her to start someplace cold, but someplace with a wide open field of vision. It is flat and open, and everything is visible. Everything is as it seems. And again, once you're in the Amazon, unless you are on a boat in the middle of the river, you can't see more than 5 feet in any direction, which for some people, me, Marina, is a little unnerving. So I wanted to take her geographically, physically, as far as I could from one extreme to the other. And it's very shocking to her, but it also gives her an opportunity to really find out what she's capable of. Marina keeps losing things. This is really a journey of loss, from her luggage to her notion about what she knows about medicine, about human nature, about how the world operates, she keeps getting stripped down of all of her ideas and thrown into this world that she can't possibly succeed in. And yet she does, because it forces her to find her own inner resources.
It's kind of like one of those classic quest stories in which you're required to surrender everything, including your sense of self, before
Absolutely.
You can find the prize.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. It's the Buddha's journey, in a way.
Mm-hmm. And like a lot of the quest stories also, there's a moment at the beginning, a kind of entrance, which really is a kind of symbolic death. Marina gets sick, really sick. I mean, maybe with the same fever that killed her lab partner. And she doesn't just go get some antibiotics. She winds up drinking some sort of noxious brew from the local shaman.
Right. Well, and again, that's about giving up because, of course, she's a doctor. And this is way outside of her comfort zone. But she's too sick to leave the room. And I think anybody who has traveled a lot has had that experience. And maybe you've had it in Indianapolis and maybe you've had it in Manaus. But that feeling of being so sick and alone in a hotel that you couldn't possibly lift a finger to help yourself. You just kind of submit to the tile bathroom floor and you think either I'm going to die here or I'm not. And you don't really care at that moment. And at that point, one of the only people that she knows in Manaus brings her not something from the drugstore, but something from the shaman stand in the open market. And because she really has no choice, you know, this is the only thing she has to try. And her friend really bullies her into it. She does, in fact, drink the sludge.
But that's such an interesting moment, or at least I found the sludge really interesting, because, as you said, she's a pharmaceutical researcher. I mean, she studies clean Western drugs, which have been abstracted from their natural origins. And here she's drinking this stuff, who knows what's in it, and it cures her.
It is the natural origin. It is the origin itself. It does cure her, and it cures her by almost killing her, by taking her much, much farther down the pike. You know, she thinks that she is at her absolute end when she drinks the sludge. But the sludge, in fact, takes her someplace much, much deeper. It's a real Dante-esque sort of moment. She's going to go all the way down to the bottom of hell before she can turn around and come back up again.
Well, this is the first non-Western drug she experiences. And of course, she's down there looking for a kind of renegade drug researcher, a doctor who works for her and is funded by her pharmaceutical company, who has sort of been out of contact with them for years. What's going on?
Dr. Swenson, who used to be her teacher in medical school, who she both worshipped and was terrified of, has found a tribe of women in the Amazon who can maintain fertility for the rest of their lives. They chew on the bark of a tree and they have children until they die. Dr. Swenson has been funded by this pharmaceutical company to go down there and synthesize the drug and bring back a compound that can be sold to Western women so that we too can put off all of our choices until we're 80 and we can have a baby anytime we want.
Speaking as a woman and someone who has had babies, I'm not really sure that's anything to be desired.
No. In fact, often when I say that, the audience of a certain age really does gasp and recoil, like I've shown them a very old dead squirrel or something. And I always say, oh, it's a horror novel. But it's a cautionary tale. I mean, really, we keep pushing the envelope as to how far off we can put our decisions as women about our reproductive choices. I'm 47. I don't have children. And yet, every now and then, someone still resurfaces to say, well, maybe you're still thinking about it.
The scary thing, I think, about that moment in the book is you can so see that happening. I mean, if a drug like that were discovered in the Amazon, of course some pharmaceutical company would want to market it. It would become the new, you know, holy grail of fertility drugs.
And we are kind of inching towards it. I mean, it's not the craziest drug I could have invented. And when I did invent it, I was just making a list in my own mind about, okay, what would a really profitable drug be? What would a drug be that would be so profitable that a pharmaceutical company would really allow a researcher to have a blank check? And I thought, effortless weight loss, everlasting youth, fantastic thick hair, which, frankly, that's the one. That's the one I would really go all the way to the wall for. Or eternal fertility. I wasn't sitting down thinking, okay, politically, what would be interesting? Or this is really a book about women's choices. I wasn't thinking about that at all. I was just thinking money. What would be the biggest cash in a bottle that a pharmaceutical company could put together?
Novelist Ann Patchett, talking with Anne Strangechamps. Patchett's novel is called State of Wonder.